Hello, everybody, and welcome to Turn to Page, Season 6, Book 1 of Choose Cthulhu, The Call of Cthulhu. Are you ready, Raps?
I fundamentally, no.
I feel like, yeah, that is kind of the whole vibe, isn't it?
Yeah, anyone in any Eldritch horror universe who's ever gone, yep, I'm ready, I'm prepared, immediately dies.
That's the thing. It's all about the unknown. So if you're like, yep, I know about this, I'm ready for it, you're like, eh, yep. You've either spoiled the whole story and lost the plot, or you're wrong. Those are the two things.
The people who know the most in this setting are the old gods, who are unknowable themselves, and the cultists, who know enough to bring about their own doom and destruction. So I don't know anything about this world, and I resent any accusations otherwise. You don't know what I do in my basement with all the sigils and chalk.
Yeah, it's just LARPing. It's fine.
I'm doing hopscotch, actually. We're doing very complicated hopscotch down there.
Yeah. I gotta say, I know one thing about the book, and that's that the author is Leandro Pinto, and I love that name so much. I would die for Leandro Pinto so much.
Sight unseen. I'd die 4.5 times for Leandro Pinto, at the absolute least. It is bumped up a heavy amount, admittedly, by the fact that their last name can be a bean, right?
Yeah. Like,
anyone in that realm, if your last name is Baked, is if it's Pinto, if it's Lima, I'll sacrifice myself 5 times for a Lima.
Yeah, Lima Pinto. Anyway, quite excited. It's, you know, it's a Steve Jackson's Games joint. So, hey, there's some name recognition. But what do we got? Do we have two warning pages?
We have the, I believe that is the back print, the Your Sanity is at Stake.
Your Sanity is at Stake. I mean, we already know that, of course. I think we'll skip past that part because it seems like it's going to be a little bit of spoilies.
Then I'll have to take you directly into our warning page.
Huh, why don't you beware us?
How many times have you felt like screaming, "Don't do that, you fool!" when reading a book or watching a movie?
Never.
Well, this is your chance to be the one to make the decision, so if that's never a thing, never mind. This is going to be a passive operation. You'll find many different actions to carry out within the pages of these books. As you do read through the story, you'll choose what to do. Your decisions will determine whether you successfully complete your investigation, die a horrible death, or spend your last days in a mental institution. Only you are accountable for your own destiny. It is up to you to save or condemn the world. It's very simple. Once you've read what's happening, follow the instructions to find out where your choices take you. Take into consideration that you can't go back, read your options carefully, and think before you choose. In the Choose Cthulhu books, you'll not only enter the world created by H.P. Lovecraft, but you'll also have the chance to relive his dark creations. Do you think you can outsmart the children of the master himself? Oh, and when in doubt, Cthulhu Relay Fantang.
Absolutely. I always...
I hope you all got that, by the way.
Whenever
it's very important.
I am in doubt,
it's critical.
For sure.
I've flipped away from the page, so I can't tell you what I do when I'm in doubt, but it was that, definitely. I remember it by heart, but I'm trying not to show off.
Yeah, and to be clear, I wasn't just trying to be a goof. I never have felt like screaming, "Don't do that, you fool," like reading a book or watching a movie. You know why? Because I know that I'm reading a book or watching a movie, and that it's important for the plot, for these characters to be silly and have flaws. So I'm like,
have you ever had the experience though of like your favorite character is about to do the obviously dumb thing and you're like, "Oh, come on, not you."
Well, yeah, but that's I don't know. I guess I view it in everything in too much of a meta sense where I'm like, what are you doing, writers? I liked them. You know, it's like that.
I prefer to go from an even more meta sense. What are you doing, person in charge of hiring the production staff and the writing team that eventually developed this movie? Don't you know that was going to turn out like this, Greg? Yeah.
Every time I just sit there on the couch, crossing my arms, man, those first microbes, you know, like they, what are they thinking? There's all kinds of ways.
What were they thinking?
We could have gotten here. What were they thinking? Anyways. I believe, do we go through this introduction, right? It seems like more of
absolutely.
I think it's actually part. It's like a prologue more than anything. Time to feel cold and scared. I'm ready. Introduction. The cruel winter of 1926 has crept in, and you find yourself in the well-stocked library of your residence in Boston, Massachusetts. The newspapers have announced heavy snow for tonight, and from where you stand in the shadow of the bookcases, you notice the first snowflakes fall against the windowpane. Oh, baby. Your name is Francis Wayland Thurston. You better believe it is. And you work at Brown University in Providence, Rhode Island. Right now, you're enjoying your end-of-term Christmas holidays. Your reading is interrupted by the sound of pounding at your door, and your housekeeper steps inside, handing you a letter that has just arrived. Upon reading it, you learn of a tragic occurrence. Your great-uncle, George Gamble Angle, has been found dead. These are such...
Not George!
Lovecraftian... people names. I don't know why. They just really...
It's three names, baby. It's three full names.
Three full names that all could be... each one of them could be the last name of a Wes Anderson character. Like...
Yep.
Has been... George Gamble Angle has been found dead. A much-loved man of 92. He was a historian and anthropologist working as professor emeritus of Semitic languages at the same university where you work. The letter spells out strange circumstances surrounding his demise. Seems he'd been jostled by a nautical-looking fellow who'd emerged from a hut by the waterfront as your uncle was returning from the Newport boat. Physicians believe his death was owing to cardiac arrest rather than the fall itself. This missive also appoints you as the only heir and executor of his last will, and summons you for the following day to meet with his lawyer, who will advise you of your inheritance. You will acquire two more last names.
Oh, yes! I'm going to be Francis Wayland Thurston Gamble Angel! That's how you get three names in the first place. You need to defeat someone in combat and take their last name.
I'm going to get their last names. I was like, that also sounded like, you know, oh God, why can't, what's the, I can't think of it. You know, the whiskey tango.
Baseball.
Yes, that.
Oh,
sure.
The NATO baseball. Alphabet.
No, baseball.
I just thought it might be baseball. What if it was? What's that thing?
What's that thing? Let's see. First base, second base, whiskey, Cracker Jacks, baseball. That's what it is. Yes. You pack your bags immediately and prepare for the trip. The following morning, you take the train bound for Providence.
This is such a classic opening.
Oh, big time. Following Professor Angle's funeral, you return to your Providence home, where you spend most of the year. You speak with your great-uncle's lawyer, and he provides you with everything he bequeathed you. These are the elements pertaining to an investigation to which the professor must have been very dedicated. Before you lies a peculiar locked box. You're also given the personal ring that was found in your great-uncle's pocket at the time of his death, and which unlocks the box. Oh, of course it does. Of course the ring unlocks the box. Oh, of course it does. Well, I'm so in. The contents are enigmatic. There's a clay bas-relief, a manuscript divided into two parts, and a stack of press clippings, as well as a handful of papers with notes penned by the professor himself. Each and every one of these objects sparks your inquisitive spirit. Besides, is it possible that the contents of this box may somehow be related to the strange death your great-uncle suffered? Probably not. No.
Yeah, unrelated. He got jostled by a nautical-looking man. Man, what looked like a boat just knocked him off the pier.
You know what? Come to think of it, it was a boat.
It might have been a boat.
It just might be related. In that case, which of these objects do you want to examine first? Perhaps, what is a clay bas-relief?
I only became familiar with Bastardly. By the way, I will note as well, for anyone who is listening and is familiar with another pronunciation, apparently Bas Relief and Bar Relief are both fine. You can say
that. I win!
Exactly. So I encountered it first in Darkest Dungeon, as one might for something like this. It was in the Pelagic Groupers area. It's effectively a... It's like a 3D artwork, effectively. It's like a large circular disc, often, that has embossed images and text upon it.
Gotcha.
A way of encoding storage information in language of times past.
All right. If you want to study that, page 32. If you'd rather read the manuscript penned by your great uncle, do so on page 17. If the press clippings have caught your attention the most, check them out on page 56.
I quickly have to ask, do you have a lien?
Big time.
Ooh, great. What is it?
It feels like we should really read the manuscript. It feels like it will give us the most context.
Mm-hmm.
The quickest. Even if it makes none sense, it just seems the most logical as to... maybe that's just me being like, okay, well, in a movie, you would read the note first. You're not gonna... Okay, mm-hmm. No, in a movie, what they would do is they would grab all of the things and hold them up and like turn them sideways, looking at them like just for like half a second. And then they would grab the note and then they would read it and hear the person's voice in their head. That's what would happen. So I guess.
Yep. And we would understand from the cinematographic language that because they picked up the press clippings, they probably read them at some point.
Yeah.
The note would also then go on to explain what's in the press clippings. So definitely, yeah. I'll meet you on 17.
They'd have like a fade in of like a bunch of different press clippings. Like, you know, man dies from death. Man dies to death.
such a tragic way to go.
Classic headline. Oh, yeah, we can click. The manuscript is made up of two stacks tied with twine. Each half bears a title written in the immaculate calligraphy of your great uncle. Although it seems both have a general and shared heading, hit me with it, Raps.
The Call of Cthulhu.
The first section is headed
1925. Dream and Dream Work of H.A. Wilcox, 7 Thomas Road, Providence, Rhode Island.
While the other is titled
Narrative of Inspector John R. LeGrasse, 121 Bienville Street, New Orleans, Los Angeles, at 1908 AAS Management. Notes on same and Professor Webb's accounts.
Apparently, they deal with profusely researched and important matters. Which of the two would you like to pursue peruse first? I guess both work. Which would you like to pursue a perusal? Although, perhaps you'd prefer to return your attention to the box once more and choose another object. If you choose to read The Dream and Dream Work of Henry Wilcox, page 10, start by reading Inspector LeGrasse's report, 51, the bas-relief, or the press clippings.
I have a lean immediately here, which is that if we have two manuscripts, or rather our manuscripts made of two individual stacks, and one of them leads with... Well, yeah, exactly. Let's turn both pages over the first time, and then we'll overlay...
One eye on both pages.
Can we do... Exactly. It's either a magic eye, or it might be one of those Mad Magazine foldovers where you have to fold out the middle.
Yeah, okay, sorry.
And then we just get to see a little picture of that guy, like, doing a... What's his name? Orville Wilcox or something?
Mad Max? Clue. I don't know.
Mad Max. It's Mad Max himself. I like the idea that, like, both of these are different ways of interpreting the same events, and one of them being dream and dream work, like, it's accessing this understanding through the mystical and occult. The other one seems to be much more, you know, boots on the ground, like, a report, like, just the facts of the case from an inspector.
And do you have a lean? I steered us pretty hard to this page in the first place, so if you'd like to...
I'd love to read the informational one first, because I think the interpretation of it then becomes clearer in the other ones.
Yeah, it might provide good context for how to even read the other one. So 51?
Exactly. Yep.
Right.
Oh, the images in this book are great.
Wait, you got an image?
Just two above 51. Because I've been scrolling through like a chump.
You decide to focus on Inspector LeGrasse's report, which turns out to be quite interesting. He describes the way in which he came to possess a stone idol representing a similar figure to that on the bas-relief contained within the box. Apparently, he captured the idol during a raid through the swamps of New Orleans in November of 1907, where a strange ritual was taking place. He also mentions the events that transpired in 1908 during the annual meeting of the American Archaeological Society in St. Louis. LaGrosse arrived there with the stone idol, and among the astonished scholars that were there, only Professor William Channing, sweet baby cheese, Professor William Channing Webb offered his testimony. It is illegal to have less than three names in your name. At all times, do not be caught with your pants down and your name short.
This person defeated Channing Tatum in combat and took his first name. Remarkable. And Professor Oak, and then took his title.
Oh,
incredible.
God. Professor William Channing Tatum Webb offered his testimony. He connected the statuette with a tribe in Greenland. Once you have read the report in its entirety, you research further and discover not only that LaGrosse is still alive and working as an inspector in New Orleans, but that in England, Professor Webb's son has picked up his father's investigation where he left off. Is it possible, therefore, to meet either of the men who participated in your great uncle's investigation? Who will be first? Inspector LaGrosse or Professor Webb's son?
Ooh. I mean, LaGrosse was one step behind Webb, who connected the statuette with the tribe in Greenland. I wonder if his son might have more understanding of the situation than LaGrosse even at the time.
Yeah, I'm with it.
I want to see Webb's son. I think he might be, like, I think it's possible that we're choosing the cult angle out. Well, I mean, we're focusing on the cult of Cthulhu, right? But I think it's possible we're choosing to focus on the occult side of this rather than the because oftentimes, like, cosmic stories are told through, like, multiple different lenses. There's, like, the by-the-books policeman, and then there's the you know, occultist. There's the person who's starting to go mad as they understand more things. There's, like, very obvious tropes in this world. And I feel like Professor Webb's son is going to be a little bit on the fritz as we start to meet him.
Well, let's find out. There's no doubt that Professor Webb's son is on the fritz. No. There's no doubt that Professor Webb's son could be the key here. If his father had first-hand details about the Cthulhu cult, then it's expected that his son retains a large part of the documentation that constituted his investigation. Resolving to meet him, you travel to London, full of hope for this new approach. Profind Professor's Webb's son in London's on page 6.
Pages 6.
Oh my god, dialogue? It exists? I was starting to get worried. Finding Arthur J. Webb, the son of William Channing Tatum Webb, should be easy enough, since he followed his father's footsteps and is now a renowned professor of anthropology at Oxford University. His father made a name for himself when he toured Iceland and Greenland in search of some runic inscriptions, which he failed, sadly, to unearth. He made a name for himself when he totally botched it in Greenland. Webb gives you a cold welcome, but this changes immediately to fascination when you show him your great-uncle's possessions. The manuscript and the press clippings go almost unnoticed, but he appears to be captivated by the bas-relief. Almost by accident, you notice that his office is decorated with some pieces of artwork that prove he's been involved with the so-called Cthulhu cults. The squid dragon is represented time and time again. Is that how Cthulhu is interpreted, as a squid dragon? I guess.
I don't know, but, like, it's immediately evocative of the thing that I think of as Cthulhu. So.
I have never once heard Cthulhu referred to as a squid dragon, but upon seeing it, I'm like, yeah, I guess.
Which, frankly, makes it a poor descriptor, of an eldritch beast, because usually they always try and avoid giving it any tangible, like, understandable alternative or reality to comprehend it through. It's usually just, you couldn't even possibly imagine what this thing looks like.
Yeah. When you were attacked
by... squid dragon.
Yeah. When Daryl...
That's a Yu-Gi-Oh card. It has 1,200 attack and 600 defense. Like, it's garbage.
Yeah. Yeah, but just wait until you get the fusion summon and it's Buster Squid Dragon. You don't even know. It's like, you know, draw two cards, send six to the graveyard, summon one monster from the graveyard, and then, you know, do 200 LP damage to the opponents. Repeat ad nauseum, because this game is basically who gets the OTK first. I love Yu-Gi-Oh! And what a game. What a game.
I was about to tell a very long story that is not necessary. But I also like Yu-Gi-Oh!
You know what's not long? A game of Yu-Gi-Oh! in 2024. Anyways. That'll be relevant to somebody. The so-called Cthulhu cult.
Zane Malik.
The squid dragon is represented... Represented time and time again on the different pages of other pieces of pictorial intent.
This is the work of a true acolyte of great Cthulhu,
he says in fascination, observing Wilcox's bas-relief. Bas-relief. It feels wrong, but it's...
Bas-relief.
You share your investigating reports with him, and he immediately suggests you accompany him to Greenland in search of a tribe that is believed to worship this ancient deity. Okay. Whoa. Come on. Let's go to Dave & Buster's first. Let's just dial it back a bit.
I don't even know if I like you yet.
I don't know if I like you. I don't want to go to Greenland to see the worshippers of a squid dragon yet. Like, come on. Like, buy me an app. Come on. Webb's proposal appears enticing, although you actually find his obsessive and ingratiating tone rather revolting. You must choose a destiny. If you join Professor Webb on his Greenland tour, turn to page 92. If you'd rather abort the European mission and return home, do so on page 20.
I mean, we basically got the exact same information again. Like, yep, this is related to Greenland.
Yeah, but this is like, we get to go.
Exactly.
Does that... You find his obsessive and ingratiating tone rather revolting.
Mm-hmm. I almost wonder if, like, is it possible that Professor Webb... Professor Jordan James John Jingleheimer Webb. Mm-hmm. Is it possible that when he saw that our grandfather, I believe, held the bas relief... He then sought to kill him in order to get it? Because, like, it seems to have been of great import to him and his work. I wonder if it's possible that we've just effectively... it's like we've emptied out the bank account of our dead relative and gone, is this what you were looking for? To the person who robbed them.
Yeah. Could be. I mean, why doesn't he just kill us here, I guess? I don't know. Anyway.
Fair. Maybe it's just easier to kill in Greenland. It's a PvP zone.
Yeah, that's true.
Let's check it out. Let's check out Greenland.
Yeah, it feels like it's maybe too obvious that we would be betrayed after they said that we are uncomfortable about this. I don't know.
Exactly.
Like,
what are we going to be comfortable with in this world?
Yeah, I think that's the thing is if you're comfy, that's the problem. That's what we already talked about. So let's go literally... in the direction of uncomfort. Discomfort. You join Professor Webb's expedition. You travel to Liverpool, and over the course of the next 2 days, get your affairs in order, ready to leave. To your surprise, you discover that the small brigantine you ought to sail on has barely any experienced crew members. That's the scariest thing for me so far. Once settled in the stern cabin, Professor Webb comes to show you something very special. He produces a statuette from his trunk. It's about 9 inches high and has been delicately crafted. It represents the same cuttlefish-headed monster. Wow, so accurate. Again. Cuttlefish-headed monster with a palp-adorned face. His rotund and scaly body sports two disproportionate claws for hind legs and narrow wings at the back.
This is Cthulhu. You already know him. He's the figure in your bas-relief, too. Inspector LaGrasse... A Louisiana inspector of police offered this statue to my father in 1908.
It's hideous, you think, as you study the slippery surface of the fetish. It is revolting beyond all aesthetic measure, Rude.
Inspector LaGrasse intercepted this figure after a raid, where he broke apart a cult in the swamps. He believed my father was well suited to own it, but I think he gave it up gladly.
His reverential tone and wild gestures whenever you try and have a closer look at the statuette are indicative of his state of mind.
Oh, and there's more, Mr. Thurston. This beauty will be our letter of safe passage in Greenland.
A few minutes short of a half hour later, the vessel sails from Liverpool northwards to the gelid coasts of Greenland. Visit that frozen land on 76. I love that.
Sounds inviting.
You visit that frozen land. You go, girl. You go, girl. You visit Greenland, girl. Let's go.
You turn that page.
You plan to... Okay. You plan to disembark in Nusok, a peninsula located on the coast of Greenland, where, according to the posthumous reports of Webb Sr., the idol originated. Judging by the coordinates, it's not far from the famous Northwest Passage, where the tragic Franklin expedition disappeared in 1847. The sailors pilot the ship with the utmost caution, avoiding the treacherous icebergs that appear here and there. Eventually, after a long journey, you arrive in Nusok. Upon disembarking, you find the townspeople unwelcoming and strange. Weirdly happy and sullen. Rude. It's just...
Just immediately get off the boat. You're all garbage! I hate you!
This is... The people here aren't like the people where I just was. I don't like that.
Just screaming at the first Greenland person you meet. Why are you so sad to see me?
Why are you like this? Be like my friends and family.
Come on, be Greg.
I miss Greg. You consider it might be owing to the weather and the hardships of such an isolated and almost resourceless place. Ooh, drag it. Okay, wow.
Get got, Greenland.
Your land is isolated and has no resources.
The people are strange.
The people are strange and unhappy. You rent a room at an inn by the wharf and are offered fish for dinner, in greater abundance than you could have expected. At the crack of dawn the following day, you expect to resume your expedition towards the interior of the island, where you hope to find the last worshippers of Cthulhu. Prepare for the final expedition on page 87.
That's not ominous at all.
Who's final? Yeah. You're having a rough night. Although it's nothing to do with the weather, and everything to do with Greenland.
Those strange, sullen people.
The strange, sullen, resourceless people.
Oh no!
It's so mean. The walls of this... I like Greenland. The walls of this inn have been designed to... That's why I'm so mad at the book. Just... The walls of this inn have been designed to withstand Greenland. Okay, fine. Have been designed to withstand the freezing temperatures of Greenland. What is keeping you awake is the eerie prayers that you hear Professor Webb reciting all night long. As your eyes adjust to the dark, you think that you can make out Professor Webb kneeling before his bed, and you can almost swear that the stone idol is standing on the mattress in front of him. You close your eyes and, for your own sake, tell yourself that this is not real. But you wake up almost certain that Webb has lost all traces of his sanity. Before 6 o'clock in the morning, Professor Webb comes to your bed and advises you to get ready. The dog sled that will drive you to the interior of the island will soon be here. Do you want to be a passenger to a dog sled? Where are you at?
Oh.
Is it conflicting at all? Is it a big yes? Where are you at?
No, it's a big yes. It's a big yes. I might just be like the ignorant optimist in the situation, yeah, but I hope those sled dogs enjoy it. I hope they're like, hell yeah, we did it. Like, we worked together and we went.
Let's run fast, dude. Yeah, I mean, I think they probably do like that. I've heard it is a very uncomfortable and bumpy ride, but whatever. I just want to meet the dogs. I want to meet the dogs and cheer them on.
Effectively, Raps, would you like to ride on a dog sled? I'd like to meet four dogs, and that seems like an easy way to do it.
Yeah, that is a convenient way to meet four dogs at the same time. So, yes. Okay. The dog sled that will drive you to the interior of the island will soon be here. The professor's eyes glare with insanity. What if you pretend to be so sick that you could return to civilization while he sets off on his own? Or do you think that it'd be foolish to back down now that you've come out all this way to be here? If you want to make up an excuse and let Webb face this demented expedition on his own, turn to 91. Otherwise, trust everything will just be fine and be his companion on the expedition on page 54. The tone there is not
too... How far are we willing to go?
The tone there is quite...
Yeah, look, if you want to make up an excuse and save your life, feel free to.
If you just want to think that everything's going to be fine for some reason, I mean, like, go ahead.
If you're dumb, you can take this option. I think we should take that
option. I think what is... Perhaps at least four dogs.
Hell yeah. Four dogs.
At least four dogs. Let's find out. The temptation overpowers your fears regarding the potential madness of Professor Webb. There are four dogs on the line to meet, and so you prepare for your trip. Less than an hour later, you are both in a dog sled. The dreadful stone statuette has also come along for the ride, which makes you feel anxious. Webb's eyes seem glazed over, clouded by a thick veil of insanity. The journey becomes tricky and bumpy. The ground is gelid and uneven, and the dogs, however well trained, barely manage to avoid the obstacles along the path. At some point, seized by desperation, you ask Webb how he did not think of hiring a guide. He looks at you as if you were the insane one.
No one should know where we're headed!
He spits out. And now you shudder in fear, realizing that he just implied that you are completely at his mercy. Well, he's at the mercy of the dogs, so... Eventually, after hours traversing the unending plains of a monotonous whiteness, you come to a village of igloos in the middle of nowhere. Night is falling, and only the flickering lights of the collection of intermittent fires manage to crackle through this dense darkness. You climb down from the sled half a mile from where a ritual is being performed.
Come now, we must continue on foot,
says Webb. You set out in that direction, and with an escalating fear, you realize that the professor has a tight grip on the statuette of the distorted god of Cthulhu. You approach the igloo village on page 98.
I'm baffled that we haven't died. Yes.
Yep.
with our trajectory.
This is going to have to be like a pretty impactful death. Like, they're setting us up for being sacrificed, one can only imagine.
Oh, yeah. Walking half a mile passes quite quickly. As you made your way, you felt as though the stone idol in Webb's hands was vibrating. At last, you arrive at the location where the ritual is taking place. In the middle of a circle of celebrants, all of them covered in a thick fur coat, a sort of gassy and multiform column rises. It could be the result of a condensed vapor that steams from the frozen ground. At first, it looks like a regular fog, but then it becomes a pedestal. The tribe sings a demented summoning verse that causes Webb's statuette to vibrate even more intensely.
We should leave here, Professor Webb,
you mumble. He looks at you again as if you were the insane one.
Shut up, Thurston,
he roars.
They are awaiting the arrival of this idol. And I'll be the one to hand it over. And then, only then will the summoning ritual be complete. Only then may the great Cthulhu come.
Without another word, he steps into the middle of the circle with the idol in hand. The celebrants do indeed welcome the statuette, as if it were a gift from the heavens. You're uncertain how to proceed. Do you want to join Professor Webb and just take part in this ritual on page 103? If you'd rather be a bystander of this rite, from afar, do it on page 107.
There's no throwing back now.
Do the ritual? I mean,
yeah, let's bring Cthulhu to Earth.
I mean, he'll at least like us more than the average person, probably as a result.
Exactly.
Maybe he'll let us meet dogs.
Oh, we could have skipped the entire quest and just gotten a dog. Damn it.
Oh my god, you're so right. I forgot about that option.
The secret option in every turn to page.
Yep. Go home and adopt a corgi. Just. With four long strides, you catch up with Professor Webb, who hands the stone idol to the leader of the cultists. He in turn places it atop the pedestal, and a split second later, the chanting erupts again. It's a demented litany bursting with consonants and unspeakable words. The worst comes when you realize that Webb seems to know these hymns word for word. He joins in, if already a member of this brotherhood. The figure resting on the top of the pedestal starts to vibrate, and you can almost swear that it's enlarged. The chant grows in excitement, and the ground starts trembling. The voices are louder, and the sky is darker. Some audible cracks reveal that the gelid ground... That is the most I've said the word gelid in ages. Ever.
That's...
ever. That's the
I've
most I've said gelid
this
ever
word in my life.
Yeah.
Oh, I see. Extremely cold. Cool.
All right. Where you are standing is splitting underneath your feet. You look down and through the transparent and gelid ice, you get a glimpse of a spectacular tentacular figure that is swimming your way, plowing through the frosty, gelid waters. A final tremor causes the whole scene to shake until you experience the cataclysm on page 64.
That's probably fine,
that's
right?
That's probably fine. It's probably good and fine. It's probably good and fine.
Okay, good. I'm reassured.
Until, you know what, Raps? Give me this page. Send me this page.
Sure, let me clip this out. Excellent. I'll also give it a little bit of a read as well. Was it unless, the previous word on the previous part?
Let's see.
Until.
That is until.
Until an earth-shattering vibration and furious divergence tear open a giant crack on the gelid floor. An insuperable and gelatinous creature covered in frost emerges from the abyss. Instantly, you recognize it as a small replica of the squid god himself. Its dragon-like body with feelers, rudimentary wings, and fearful claws that reach for the sky in celebrations of its newfound liberty. The cultists are screaming in fits of hysteria and religious ecstasy as they run away. The pedestal disappears, engulfed by frozen earth, while the stone fetish is crushed under the rage of this creature. It roars so violently that you're convinced the entire world will tremble. As your companion's sanity is torn apart, Professor Webb escapes your line of sight. Everything around you is a chaos of people either fleeing or being crushed by this extraordinary thing. Some are crying in terror, others are scratching their faces until they bleed, or pulling at their hair, or clawing their eyes from their sockets.
Overreact too much?
Yeah, exactly.
Never meet your idol.
Just look up some eye bleach, watch a video of a dog. All good. Then, the ice under your feet gives way and you are falling. Frozen water stings your body like flaming needles. The current drags you to the dark abyss, and you cannot help thinking that perhaps this will be a sweeter death than if you were left to die at the hands of the terrifying creature that you've liberated. Through the semi-transparent lid of your ice coffin, you spy the creature leaving this unknown peninsula. A few moments later, the comfort of this abyss of frozen darkness swallows you forever. The end.
Good end!
Woo! Wait.
We meet a
we
nice
did it. We made a friend.
End. Let's go. All right. So, yeah, okay, fine. Fine. Maybe it's a death. Perhaps.
Maybe it's a little bit of death. Sure.
Sure.
But everybody's got to die sometime. And at the moment, everybody's got to die. So, you know, works out.
Yeah.
Should All we right. Let's see check. What happens yeah. if we're just, like, bystanders in this ritual, though?
Yeah, I don't have a whole lot of confidence in that either, but hey, here we go.
Exactly. I'm fully expecting that to go quite poorly for us. What page is that on?
107.
107, I'll meet you there.
From a distance, you see Professor Webb carry the stone idol to the heart of the ritual. The officiants cease their chanting, stunned by the presence of the statuette, and place it on a pedestal that rises in the middle of the ice. A second later, they withdraw knives from their robes and stab Webb to death. An explosion of viscera and blood stains the gelid ground. You turn on your heels, hoping to escape, but a lacerating pain in your stomach stops you. You close your eyes. You feel the blood dribbling down your abdomen, running down to your legs, and when you open your eyes again, you're facing a lunatic stare. A pair of bloodshot eyes glinting under the hood. In their hands, they're holding a sturdy harpoon, forcing it further, digging the spear deeper into your body, piercing your guts until the tip tears through your back. Then, in a display of extraordinary strength, they swing you upright, skewering the bottom of the spear into the gelid ground. To be clear, it's not saying gelid this many times. I'm just, instead of frozen, it's funny. And exhibiting you as a terrifying trophy. Horribly impaled, your body slides down. This is freaking Mortal Kombat?
Yep.
Fatality. Horribly impaled, your body slides down the splintered wood. You try to understand how you arrived at this destiny. I think I have some ideas. And then you hear again the demented chants of the tribe.
Aye, aye, Cthulhu Fatal.
The end.
Good lord. I felt my internals recede further internal. That made my gut feel weird to read.
Yeah, yeah. No. Nope.
I don't want that to happen to me.
I would not like to die that way. Please. Mm. And thank you. I want to die as just a sleepy guy.
Yeah, exactly. Just not wake up one
just
day.
Not wake up. Come on. Not wake up style.
Well, how far back do we need to go in this point to get to...
on 87...
87?
We can... we can make an excuse and say we're sick.
Yeah. I think... I think we always knew we were coming back to this page.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. I think so. All right. You question whether things can possibly go well when accompanied by someone as ill as Webb, whose sanity has been crumbling since he set eyes on the clay bodily. Okay. Okay. I'm noting that. Mm. You pretend to have the flu. I'm like big sick, dude. And await Achoo. Webb's reaction. Achoo! Patooey! But he does not seem to feel any disappointment. Oh, no. That's not... See, that's the thing. It's like, when you get out of plans, it feels good, but then imagine if the person said, oh, okay, whatever, sick.
Like, yeah, even worse.
Oh, that's worse. No, be bothered. Be like, oh, man.
I'm so sorry I can't make it to your birthday. I did manage to get dressed and everything like that. I managed to get on a ride, but unfortunately, as I was getting off of the bus, the doors closed behind me, and then the bus started taking off down the street, and I got dragged a total of 500 meters. I've got awful road rash, and I'm in the ICU, so I'm not going to be able to make it to your birthday, and someone just responds, K.
Yeah, or like, oh, yeah, that's fine. My mom told me to invite you. I don't care.
Yeah, I really wasn't.
I hope your bones are.
This
like,
will not affect me.
I don't know why you told me this. They say.
They just send back okay question mark.
They respond. Who told you you were invited?
And then you die. You flatline instantly.
You're picking up the phone in the hospital bed. Bloop, 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 bloop. Checks text. Bloop. Oh, okay. Where was that? He's determined to get to the heart of the cults and will proceed with or without your help. I do believe that. Less than an hour later, peering from your window, you see him riding the dog sled towards the interior of the island. The eerie stone statuette by his side. Traversing this frozen plateau, unaccompanied, is suicidal. In a way, you have signed this poor man's death certificate. Yeah, I agree. Knowing the side parallel reality? I think so. Somehow, this research has changed you. Closing the curtains, you let out a sigh of relief. You are aware you came close to doing something crazy, and a few hours later, when you're positive that Webb is not coming back, you head for the brigantine and bribe the sailors to get you out of this place. They eventually agree, and soon after the ship sails its way to New England. Once at home, you feel safer. You don't wish to consider Professor Webb's fate. All right. If you have yet to study the clay bas-relief, do it on page 32. The phrasing on that is pretty... That feels like a I'm not asking to me. What about you?
Hmm. I wonder if it's possible that we could have gotten to this page having already looked at the bas relief, and it's just being very literal.
Yeah, no, I think that's the thing, because we could have looked at it already. It's taking us to the same page as the very first choice. And it's, I think
Ooh,
it's...
I don't trust that then.
But like, if you have yet to study the clay bas relief, do it on page 32.
Although I guess if we go down that line, it also has the possibility of going, if you had gone to Greenland with Professor Webb, you can possibly go to this page. I don't know. They might be doing some like additional like item, like kind of like inventory management.
Yeah, but I'm getting at mostly is it seems like this is a situation where we don't have a choice, because there are two other options after it, but I don't feel like we're supposed to be able to pick them. I think we might end up in a logical inconsistency.
Oh, right. That it's, yes, okay. I understand now. I do think it's a precondition to the other one. So yeah, we should go to 32. I mentally I was trying to avoid it because I wondered if it was possible that, you know, because Webb was driven mad after looking at it, is it possible we're going to get a little tainted by it as well?
Yeah, that's the thing. I don't want to look at it. I don't want to. But I do think that the phrasing on it seemed like we didn't have a choice. To me, that's how I interpreted it, at least.
Gotcha.
The clay bar relief depicts a monster of a form that only a diseased fancy could conceive. It suggests an amalgamation of a humanoid creature with a dragon and a squid. Wait, so we can conceive it? Well, yeah.
Well, I mean, we're a diseased fancy.
Yeah, I mean... Next to the bas relief are the notes penned by your great uncle himself, implying that he was not able to decipher the meaning of the indescribable hieroglyphs that are carved on the tablet. They're so indescribable, they kind of look like a bird and a man and a... There's also a brief...
And the rest of the Roman alphabet.
It's basically just... It's hard to decipher the meaning of these hieroglyphs. They're indescribable. It's basically just English, but also sometimes there's a man or a bird.
You have to figure out what any of it means.
Today I went to McDonald's. Man, bird, 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 man.
This could mean anything.
What if it says...
It's a ritual. It's got to be a ritual.
What if it says, psych, no, I didn't, after? Then we'd have the meaning all mixed up.
I guarantee it does.
There's also a brief description of the artist who sculpted this. His name is Henry Anthony Wilcox. Three names.
Woo!
And he lives in the Florida Lease Building, a student accommodation near the Rhode Island School of Design. Perhaps it would be advisable to pay him a visit. Or maybe you'd rather examine the rest of the contents of Professor Angle's box. If you decide to meet Wilcox, page 69. Wilcox on 69. If you have not read the manuscript, we did. Wait, no, did we?
Yeah, we read the manuscript. It's the press clippings we haven't read, which is the next option.
If you have yet to study the press clippings, do so now on page 56.
To be clear, it also says, and wish to do so now. So that one is clearly a question, whereas the other one clearly wasn't. So you're right about that. I admittedly am still interested in these press clippings.
All right. Sure. Gives us some details.
You haven't studied it.
It's true.
This will complete our full triplet as well. We will have looked at the bas relief. We will have read the manuscripts. And now, the clippings.
The press clippings that your great uncle had collected come from the most remote corners of the earth. There's news about a man who committed suicide in London upon waking up in the middle of the night, leaping from a window after a shocking cry of, how do you pronounce
Patong!
This? Yes. Patong! There's a dispatch from California describing a theosophist colony as donning white robes and masks for some glorious fulfillment that is fast approaching. Some outline an unprecedented restlessness in India. Others report on disturbing behavior of some tribes in the Philippines. On the presence of an albino alligators in the New York sewers. I mean, that one seems fine to me. I don't know. That one doesn't seem... Anyway.
The rest of this seems quite obviously malicious or bad. That's just like... some of these alligators are like lacking pigmentation.
And on an occurrence,
I guess they're also in the sewer. It's probably the alligators,
you know,
in the sewer part. That's probably the worst.
Yeah, maybe it's the sewers, but you know, in my head, I'm just like, I'm so cartoon brain that I'm like, yeah, of course there's alligators in the sewers.
Yeah, 100%. I'm just that's why you don't sit on the toilet too long, because they'll bite you through the tubes.
Exactly. And on occurrence in the Paris Spring Salon, where a painter by the name of Ardois Bonnot exhibited a piece he labeled Dream Landscape, the nature of which was so blasphemous that the event had to be canceled.
Ooh.
Oh, no. God. Oh, please. The true horror of making a piece of art so bad that they shut down a whole museum event. Like, oh, my God. God, this sucks so bad. We're just canceling the whole thing. Like,
you tainted the rest of the pieces.
I don't like art anymore.
I'm getting a job as an accountant.
I know.
I think
I think I suddenly feel a calling for balancing checkbooks. Like, I don't aspire to any creativity in any way. This, you've ruined me.
I made a wrong choice on page one.
All the press clippings refer to events that took place between early March and early April, 1925. It is possible the key to unravel your great-uncle's investigation lies here. If you resolve to chase down the strange wonders and signs that they've reported upon, travel may be required to visit some locations. You know what? I'm going to hit you with a yeah. I think so.
Yep.
They are not, you know, let's just look at one. India and New York are not in the same place.
And I don't think Paris is even close to either.
I mean, we all know that New York and the Philippines are neighboring.
Of course.
New York is obviously an island. yeah. Okay.
Yeah, Manhattan is just an island.
Yeah.
Which, of course, floats vaguely near the coast of England and
it's
also
just,
the Philippines. We
fully
understand.
It's just separated
this.
By some water. Like, you know, basically. It's island stuff. Anyways, if you go through the box where you keep all of your savings to see if you can afford to go on such trips, turn to page 9. If you've not studied that we'd have, if you've not checked out the manuscript, for what it's worth, we didn't look at one of the parts of the manuscript.
Yes, the dream and dreamworks, the second half of it.
So there is something to do there if we wanted to do it there, but...
I do like going for full understanding of the universe, but I do wonder if that would break anything.
Yeah, I also wonder if we have enough money to go on a trip. I would, you know what? We have a maid.
1 cent, 2 cents.
We have a library and a maid.
Yeah, those were donated.
Yeah.
Because we were doing so poorly.
I mean, I kind of want to know. Should we go to page 9 just for out of fear of breaking things? And also for the off chance that we will get roasted. The case of the Californian Theosophus is noteworthy, so is that of the suicidal man in London and the embarrassing scandal at the Paris Spring Salon during the exhibition of the blood-curdling dream landscape. Determined to pack your bags, you must choose a destination to commence your investigation. I want to see alligators! Oh, man.
Sadly, that's not relevant.
At least they noticed. All right, they noticed it's probably not as connected. If you decide to travel to San Francisco, page 18, to the ship to Marseille. Yeah, what is, so you Marseille. I mean, I Marseille, that is spelled, it's pronounced Marseille.
Marseille pronounce it Marseille.
Marseille pronounce it Marseille. Okay, whatever, that's done with that. From where it should be easy to travel to Paris and visit the Spring Salon on page 102. Another option is to travel to London, look for more information about the mysterious suicidal man on 95. Do you have a lean? Because I do, and it's...
Okay, then I don't.
I want to see the art that was so bad that it shut down the museum.
Show me dream landscape.
I need to know. It's the most evocative of them for sure. You arrive in Marseille. And the express drops you in Paris a few hours later. Sorry, I'm just being Marseille. Since you find the commotion around the Spring Salon interesting, true, you decide to attend it to gather information regarding the dream landscape. It's been almost 2 years since the incident, but the staff involved still has a clear memory of it. The oil painting exhibited by Ardois Bonnot caused all attendees a deep sense of discomfort. Experts on pictorial art have failed to explain the origin of dread and fright, but many of the people present, including some of the judges, fled terrified from the exhibition hall at the sight of the canvas. You politely ask if you could see the painting in question. They lead you to a very small room, barely over 3 square feet, where it is hanging on one wall, covered with a cloth. The managers at the Spring Salon inform you that it is a sight so perturbing that no one has dared remove the cloth.
How could I get to see it?
You ask. They exchange uncomfortable glances and say,
Sir, you would have to purchase it. Then you may do what you please with that thing. But it must be very far away from here, Monsieur Sustan.
The painting is quite pricey, but you can afford it. It actually boils down to the question, are you brave enough to buy it and set your eyes on it? If you purchase the dream landscape, determine to remove the cloth and see it for yourself, turn to 46. If you believe the painting could lead you to madness, exit the Spring Salon. And if you've not visited England yet, cross the English Channel in search of the anonymous man on page 95. If you think you have all the answers you can get from Europe, considering our situation, that's just such an insult to Europe. Because we just got here. We just got off the boat, walked into the museum. Like, I mean, that's about all I can get from Europe. From Europe. In entirety of Europe. I'm going home. That's so funny.
There's way more paintings not to see there.
I mean, we have to at this point. We have to.
Also, like, bold of this guy to be like, do I have enough money to travel? And then we get to the do I have enough money to travel page, and it's not mentioned. Money is never mentioned in it. Like, I was hoping he would pop open the box and, like, a couple flies would, like, buzz out. You know, something like that. A little bit cartoonish, you know? We get to this page instead, and he's like, I will buy your priciest painting.
Yeah. Basically, a couple flies came out and they buzzed around the head and said, you could buy Coca-Cola. The company.
But that costs a whole 4 cents.
46. You purchased the dream. The dream close landscape.
I'm going to have to guess that that was a failure in type formatting.
Perhaps. At the indicated price, the organizers of the Spring Salon let out a sigh of relief, as though a dark weight had been lifted from their shoulders. They waved goodbye with a sad look in their eyes and shut the door to the gallery, closing the curtains with haste. You leave Paris and return to Marsili with your treasure under your arm. You've not plucked up the courage yet to draw the cloth and look at the painting. The excitement of the trip might hamper the detailed analysis of the work that you plan to carry out. Calmness and tranquility are critical if you wish to scrutinize beyond a mere first impression, and that can only happen at home. However, during the voyage back, you feel the painting call your name in whispers, and you find it hard to resist the urge to observe it. You're tempted to unveil it time and time again, then at once the undeniable truth springs to mind. The images on the canvas are moving underneath the cloth. You've not seen them. No one has even suggested so, but you just know. At times, you're tempted to pick it up and throw it over the railing, so that the painting is forever lost to the depths of the Atlantic Ocean. But you should really undertake such a journey and invest a fair share in your savings on a painting just to throw it into the ocean. If you fight the urge and preserve the dream landscape until the end of the journey, keep moving to 21. If you throw the painting in the ocean, 22.
I need to know what's on it.
Yeah, it's almost like we are actually under the influence of the painting.
100%. I don't care if I go a little mad. Like, come on.
It's a book. It's a book. It's a painting in a book. I can't see it. I just know for a fact that it's moving. I just need to.
I just have to observe it with my own eyes.
Just a little look. Oh man, Cthulhu's got abs. Look at that.
Ooh, damn, Cthulhu's thick.
Whoa, he's caked up and ready to go.
I can't believe Adwabano actually made this thirst trap of Cthulhu and tried to hang it up in the Paris Spring Salon.
I mean, hey, it's mine now. Anyways, the ship docks in New York after enduring an unbearable journey of several days. You fought back the temptation and have not yet discarded the dream landscape in spite of how revolting you find its mere existence. You feel as though your sanity is a thin layer of ice that could crack at any moment. With the painting always covered by a cloth, you return to Providence. You're home again, but not even this familiar environment soothes you. You place the painting on an easel and feel it coaxing you closer, drawing you in. And time again, it looks as if there's some meandering form sliding across the surface beneath the cloth. In a fit of madness, you lunge at it and rip off the cloth, covering it. Adwabanaut's piece is an absolute pictorial delirium. The image represents an atoll of greenish land emerging from an underwater abyss of unfathomable depth. But an islet. However, the surface is covered by an ostentatious city of minarets, pinnacles, and obelisks dripping with green slime. Observing this ancient metropolis, which has crashed through the surface of the sea, is enough to send a chill running down your spine. A split second later, however, the painting on the canvas transforms itself into a scene of pure insanity. From the guts of the underwater city, and owing to the movement of the oil paint that seems to drip and tear as it reforms before your eyes, comes an immense cuttlefish head, a writhing mass of tentacles on its face, and a pair of rudimentary wings on its back. Drag him! The painting has come to life! The creature moves forward on the canvas. It's a gargantuan creature, and insanely alien. At that very moment, the earth trembles, and you let out a piercing howl as you collapse on the floor and scratch your face furiously. When your sight is obscured by a red hue, you lose all your senses, and when you wake up, you find yourself on page 77. Hit us, Raps.
You wake up in a locked room with white walls. Your arms are restrained by a jacket with disproportionately long sleeves that are strapped to your back. You're dazed by the drugs that have been administered to you. Doctors and nurses visit you regularly and ask all sorts of questions in an attempt to understand how your shattered mind works. Your answers are monothematic, and you repeat them in an endless cycle. The Cthulhu cult. The great old ones, the underwater city of Rilaire, and the blasphemous and unpronounceable psalm that no sane person who visits you manages to utter without becoming your new cellmate. Sadly, it seems you will spend the rest of your days within these padded cells. And try as you might to scream for help, at night, the large figure of a squid-headed dragon with rudimentary wings, still basic-ass wings, little nublets of wings, still comes to your dreams to whisper blasphemous secrets. We are sorry, but no treatment can quiet your desperate pleas. The
A large figure of a squid-headed dragon with thinning hair and a receding hairline.
He's wearing a stained onesie.
There's toothpaste upon the breast of his V-neck tee. Yes, he's wearing it with a onesie. We mentioned he's messed up right now.
Okay. He's here to whisper secrets to you.
That chili Perhaps. I had last night is not sitting well with me, he says.
Your stomach turns.
Cthulhu goes to lie down. Okay.
Should leave him to lie down and check out, perhaps.
What was page 12? It was page 12. I can't remember what it was. Let me go there and I'll see. Wait, was it page? No, 22. I just got my
22,
own.
22, yes. Because we I went misunderstood to 21 my own instead writing. By not throwing the...
This is throw in the ocean.
Yes. Great. So we went to 21 because we didn't throw it in the ocean. Let's throw it in the ocean. That seems like a good idea.
You're positive that something is not right with his painting? Could it be the fact Good that instinct. Everybody told you that? I don't know. There's no doubt that Artois Bonnat, the artist, was driven insane by it. And maybe anyone who chanced to see it at the Spring Salon 2 years ago went mad about it too. If you fail to get rid of it, you're sure that you'll suffer the same fate. Picking it up and not daring to remove the cloth that covers it, you step closer to the starboard gunwale, which is not just a whale with a turd on its back, I can only presume.
But I wish it were.
If only. It is a quiet and starry night above the black waters of the Atlantic Ocean. Without a second thought, you toss the painting into the sea, and a sense of utter relief washes over you immediately. This is a feeling to produce a good night's sleep. However, you could swear that a canvas brushed the surface, something, a dark, sinister symmetry twinkled at the depths of the ocean, pulled it to its unfathomable chasms. How else could you explain that whenever you lean over the railing, you cannot make out any traces of the thin wooden frame floating listlessly on the surface? Seized by fear, you convinced... But convince you did the right thing, you head for your cabin. And the first time in a long while, you sleep like a baby for hours. Wake up relieved on page 50. I don't know if I believe you.
If I sleep like a baby for hours, I'm not waking up relieved. Babies are awful. Yeah, exactly. They cry and they pee themselves. That's like fundamental babies. Like, wake up relieved has a completely different interpretation, yeah. I guess.
Anyway, you arrive at the port of New York after a long voyage. Although you are rid of the sinister dream landscape, you get the feeling that your trip to Europe has not been in vain. Because, why? Revisiting the event that took place in the Spring Salon 2 years ago has allowed you to corroborate how detrimental this research could be to the mental health of a narrow-minded person. Yeah, narrow-minded. We definitely have not gone mad multiple times. Narrow-minded person.
Mm-hmm.
Besides, you are sure that you have not...
This would only confound those strange Greenlanders.
The resourceless fools in Greenland. Besides, you're sure that you have not painted yourself to a corner as long as you set out to another destination. This is not over yet. You have the opportunity to go to California and find that commune of Theosophists mentioned in the press clippings of Professor Angle, or travel to New Orleans via the Mississippi to meet Inspector LeGras. Interesting.
We never did try and meet Inspector LeGras. We took the other line of meeting Webb. So we could do either of these.
It's true. It's interesting to me that we only get the trip to California as the option and not whatever the other one was. Was it 18 instead of... Yeah, there was a third option that we didn't do either.
Oh, yes, the man who screamed for Tang and then jumped out the window.
The man who quit. Yep.
The alt F-ord.
Yeah. Hands up. I don't have a strong feeling on this one.
Sick. I love the number 51 because it's surprising that 51 divides into 17 three times. You don't think of either of those numbers as being related in that way, but they totally are.
That's so true. It's also one more than the page we're on, so we can just scroll down one.
Easy.
And I love that. You decide to focus on Inspector LeGras' report, which turns out to be quite interesting. He describes the way in which he came to possess a stone idol representing a similar figure to that of the bas-relief contained within the box. Apparently, he captured the idol during a raid through the swamps of New Orleans in November of 1907. Where a strange ritual was taking place. He also mentioned the events that transpired in 1908 during the annual meeting of the American Archaeological Society in St. Louis. LeGras arrived there with the stone idol, and among the astonished scholars that were there, only Professor William Channing Tatum Webb offered his testimony. He connected the statuette with the tribe in Greenland. Once you have read the report in its entirety, research further and discover that not only... We've been here, have we not?
We have been to this page specifically, yes.
Yes, we've done this.
The next, it does give us the option, though, at the end, whether we go to Professor Webb's son or LeGras. But I think the previous option also said go to 51 and then also to LeGras, weirdly.
Yeah,
that's through LeGras' report before meeting him in New Orleans. So yeah, I guess let's go to New Orleans.
All right. Took me a while.
Maybe it's just a reminder, effectively, of what happened. So there was the raid through the swamps in New Orleans in November 1907, and then in 1908, the annual meeting of the Archaeological Society.
Yar. Meeting with Inspector LeGras proves to be relatively easy. His office smells of tobacco, and the whole room is drowned in gloom, a foul half-darkness, itself a product of the New Orleans heat. Inspector John Raymond LeGras. Yes. Yes, it is. Is an honest and agreeable man. He shows empathy towards your concerns regarding your great-uncle's death and the research that has led you to his office. You brought along all the material that Professor Angle bequeathed you, and excited, you show it to him.
Damn it! This again?
He roars.
I'm sorry?
You ask, astonished.
Have we met before?
The old inspector mutters something under his breath before sitting back down in his old chair.
Yeah, sorry, I must have mistaken you for someone else.
He says, still studying you head to toe.
Let me tell you a story.
Confused but captivated by his deep and cautious voice, and hypnotized by the thick smoke of his spiced tobacco, you prepare for his tale. Listen to the story on page 67.
A couple of years ago, when this whole thing started,
starts LeGras,
I had the chance to meet someone called Johansson. Gustav Johansson. Two names, didn't trust him. He was a Norwegian sailor who, almost by accident, ended up on that accursed island relay. I was still studying the Cthulhu cult. Bear in mind that after raiding the swamps and confiscating a particular fetish, I grew almost obsessed with the case. Well, I heard about this Johansson man who was
reading about the arrival of the freighter Vigilant, which was towing the steam yacht Alert. And you know what, Mr. Thurston? I believe that a man could tell you far more interesting tales than anything you might dig up in this country. We have seen many Brotherhood's officiants performing the usual voodoo rites, but there haven't been any traces of the Cthulhu cult in New Orleans since.
If we find out that the freighter, the Vigilant, and the steam yacht Alert went down to something like an iceberg or something, I'm going to lose it in the best way.
They were said to be unsinkable.
Yeah. Titanic 2. The Titanic number 2. You stare at the inspector with what he reads as a quizzical glance and almost immediately resumes his monologue.
Trust me, I traveled to Oslo and tracked down Johansson. When I met him, he was riding down his own tail. I strongly suggest you pay him a visit, I assure you. Whatever that man encountered will shed more light on this mystery, and you won't find anything else of interest here.
As the last word leaves his mouth, he stands up and shakes your hand. You stumble out of his office, feeling disoriented, but you have to have the address of the man, Johansson, who lives in Oslo. If you decide to Norway, 89. If you want to... No, we're not going to page 51 for a third time.
Yeah. It is giving us the opportunity to read it again, so I am just going to make sure that I keep in mind that information, especially because the book mentioned at the start, you can't go back pages to get additional information before you turn. Mm-hmm. So, like, I'm certain it's going to end up being relevant. So, Vigilant, Alert, Freighter, Steam Yacht, there's 1907, November was the raid in the Greenland swamps, and then 1908 is the Archaeological Society interaction with the professor. Let's go to 89.
Talking with LaCroze opened another line of inquiry. That same evening, encouraged by his words and his unfinished tale, you board a cargo ship that departs from the New Orleans port to Europe. Wait. In this canonical life, this was the one where we were already in Europe, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's so funny. It'll arrive. Just come back for a conversation and then go back. It's very funny to me. It will arrive.
There's something else of interest in Europe now.
Oh my god. There's two things that I care about in Europe? Oh my god. I must go back. It'll arrive at the Gothenburg dock, from where you will have to find your way to Oslo, but you are willing to try. The vessel sets sail before sundown, and you get ready to cross the Atlantic. The voyage is long and tedious, but you eventually make it to Sweden, where making the right connections gets you to the capital city of Norway, and finally, to Johansson's doorstep. You knock on the door, and his wife greets you. You make your introduction. She invites you in, relieved to have someone to share her fears with.
Gustav died in strange circumstances,
she says, glancing behind her as if concerned that someone else might be listening.
He was crossing an alley by the docks, and a bundle of old newspapers fell on his head from an attic, ending his life. However, the manuscript is still here.
She puts down the cup of tea she's sipping, visibly trembling, and hands you a thick stack of papers bound by a length of twine. She seems relieved to have disposed of the document, and you set off for home. It's been a long journey, and the results somewhat meager, but you assume you might find some answers in the manuscript. Whatever they may be, you must restrain yourself from reading it until you arrive home. Face the manuscript on page 99. You're back in Boston, in the comfortable library of your own home. You know what? I forgot something in Europe. Let's go.
I love how quickly a year passes in this.
It's kind of nice. You've undergone a long journey to Oslo and recovered a crumpled manuscript that once belonged to Gustav Johansson, David. The Norwegian sailor who, according to LaGras, traveled to Raleigh 2 years ago when Professor Engel started his investigation. There's something sinister and dark about that manuscript. Somehow, you're on the fence about reading it. Poor Johansson did meet an unfortunate end, and so did Professor Engel. Are you willing to follow the footsteps of your great uncle? Is heeding the call of this Cthulhu entity just a simple way of condemning yourself to an ill-fated end? Or is it all just superstition? I'm thinking no at this point.
Mm-hmm. The multiple times I have looked directly into the eyes of Cthulhu... tell me the possibility.
I decided to read the manuscript on the same page 2, or what? What's up?
Mm-hmm. No, continue. Read the next one, and then I'll say it.
Or if you decide to throw it into the fire and abandon the research forever, light a cleansing flame on page 11.
I do think that, like, uniquely among all of the books that we've read for Turn to Page or for Choose Your Own Adventure book style, the only book where it would make sense for the good ending to specifically be abandoning the hero's path immediately would be Choose Cthulhu. I wonder if, like, any of these where we try and act like a hero and try and learn more stuff will lead to more information, but then also definitely a bad ending. I wonder if the only good endings are like, burn it, throw it into the sea, turn, close your ears, you know, forget that you had a granduncle.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, that's the intro did say, do you ever watch movies and you're like, no, don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
That the things that people always say in those moments are like, don't go to the haunted house, you idiot. Just don't go there. You
know, don't like read the Necronomicon, obviously.
Don't look at the painting, no matter how hot Cthulhu looks in it.
Ooh, he's got that little, like, the blush under his eyes that they get in anime. Oh.
Cthulhu.
Cthulhu.
That's gotta be out there. Anyways.
100%.
A million times.
Let's see if that's actually already written on this manuscript on page 2.
Yeah. Noteworthy is that page 11 is a page that we have seen before. And that's the one in which it forced us back to look at the statue.
Oh.
That's the page that we were forced to look at the statue, but we didn't really want to. Just a big note. Page 2 for now, though, I think seems like we should figure out how this kills us, right? You could not have imagined that among the papers you brought from Norway you'd find such a demented tale. Johansson's prose becomes almost palpable in his retelling of the horrors he witnessed on the island, whose name is as hard to pronounce as it is its existence unknown, drives you to derangement, like that sentence did to me. Prey to hysteria, you destroy the manuscript that, to your own dismay, you could not help reading all the way through. Henceforth, your life becomes an ongoing nightmare. You have repetitive and recurrent dreams about the strange creature that escaped from the sealed tomb of Raleigh. You've never seen it and have never been there, but it does not stop you from hearing it calling its whispered secrets, veiled threats, whenever you shut your eyes. Eventually, your neighbors can stand no more of your incessant nighttime screams. Knock it off up there! So they break into your apartment, only to find what is left of you. A dirty, convulsive, deranged creature mumbling incoherent phrases about things that come from the stars, unknown underwater cities, hot, caked-up dragon squids. No one knows what caused this delirium, but the clay bas-relief that you seem to worship with candles and small animal sacrifices certainly catches their eye. Yeah, I think that might be it. Your walls are covered with press clippings. There's pieces of manuscripts piling up around them in the apartment. It appears you have eaten a handful of them. Anyone who examines you determines it would be better for you to end up secluded on page 77. Is this the one we read?
77 is definitely familiar. That is our locked room with white walls, restrained by a jacket with disproportionately long sleeves, etc. The entire way down to no treatment can quiet our desperate pleas. So this gives us, I believe, the only other alternative on page 11?
I guess so. You do not have a good... Oh, wait, what?
Which is the page we're leading from?
Wait, I think it is.
It's 99, right? 99 goes to 2 and something
else. 2 and 11, yeah.
So this is deciding to cast the manuscript into the fire.
You don't have a good feeling regarding this whole business surrounding the so-called Cthulhu cult. Evidently, whoever gets too close to it suffers from the same terrible fate, as did your great uncle, Professor Engel. You have a comfortable life and wish for nothing else. Thus, that same night, you cast into the fire the contents of the box bequeathed to you by Professor Engel and all of the information you've gathered along the way. Out of the corner of your eye, you glimpse an infinitesimal part of the poor Professor Engel's delirium, and the abominations and the dancing devil flames curdle your blood. When the last of the embers die down, you sit comfortably on your favorite couch and remain silent, enjoying your solitude. You conclude that, although having adventures might be fine, nothing surpasses the preservation of one's own sanity. The end.
The end. A good ending.
Yeah, I mean, can there be a better ending in a book, in this book? I do wonder.
I don't imagine that there is like a, you interact with the artifacts and things like that and then come away scot-free. Like,
you
this
get a million
is going to be
the... And you become famous.
You get a new bike.
Yeah.
I legitimately believe these are probably going to be the best ending that we get. The other ones probably will have more information and stuff like that. So I guess this is the thing, right? Fundamentally, all of the Choose Cthulhu books could easily have, well, we're just looking for the first available option to abandon our quest. Because, like, that's clearly the done thing in this instance. But I also like trying to get as much available information about it as possible before then going, cool, and now let's stop. I'm not going over the precipice now, which I think is what this page 11 represents.
Yeah, I think that might indeed be the case, or at the very least on the general path that we've... Yeah, no, I mean, looking at the stuff we've explored, there's got to be more ways through this, but for sure. Yeah. I think that's at least going to be our, and you know what? It's even more of a fitting end for the first book in this series. And maybe we can perhaps set out on a more fulfilling end in a future book. Because this one does feel like the most logical. I do stand by that. I think it's the most logical good end that you could expect in a book like this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. What a wild time. A topic that again, like you said, prides itself on the indescribable. It was very evocative. Like,
extremely.
I don't know. Something especially about the painting, mm-hmm. sort of B plot. I found exceptionally evocative. And I enjoyed myself, despite being, you know, ripped apart a couple times, being driven mad a handful of times, but you know, hey. It's
one
just
of
a
the
Tuesday.
Most visceral death scenes we've read.
Oh, it has to be the most. Well, the funny thing is, some of the ones in Goosebumps, if they were described in a different way, would probably be like would be worse.
Yeah,
it's just the fact that it was described. I enjoyed myself. I'm really curious to see where else we can be taken with some of these and how we can. I definitely want to stop the Cult of Cthulhu in one of these, for sure. This guy, one of the books
I would love to.
Just like, I did it. I saved the day. Now I'm going to be on mm-hmm. the news. And, you know, I am going to be famous. I'm going to be friends with a gorilla. You know, all of the good. I'm going to meet Tarzan. All the good Goosebumps stuff. Yeah. All of the good Goosebumps endings. I'm with it.
It will absolutely have to also have immediately after that, but you feel a twinge in the back of your mind as the corruption could return. Like, it will definitely, because
yeah.
it just feels antithetical to the entire, like, setting yes. for there to even possibly be an uncomplicatedly good ending.
I think that is the thing, is I think it's going to be difficult to get an uncomplicated good ending. And this is the most uncomplicated ending I could have foreseen. I mean, but hey... Mm. Alas, I think that's that. You want to give a good old shout out, a good old thank you to our executive producer of this episode, the first inaugural episode of the Choose Cthulhu season 6 of Turn to Page podcast, the podcast that we do together.
Now that you've given all of those specifications, I absolutely would love to. Now, I know that I would love to, but unfortunately, that's all I know, because... While I can tell you that the executive producer of this episode is a chicken, I don't know which.
Oh my god, you've been driven mad.
I can't possibly conceive. This is an unknowable chicken.
It's vaguely chicken-esque in nature, but I don't know how to describe it.
Kind of squid and chicken, basically. It's 100% squid and chicken. It's very terrestrial, unknown chicken. Thank you very much for being the executive producer of this episode. Much appreciated, of course, to each and every person who supports financially or not, but financially, possibly through the source of patreon.com/turntopagecast that are above the hardcover tier of the people selected for the executive producer role of each of the episodes. Again, thank you kindly to Unknown Chicken.
Thank you very much, Unknown Chicken. And again, thank you everybody who support on patreon.com/turntopagecast. If you want to help out the podcast in another way, in a free way, that would be fantastic. YouTube.com/@turn2pagecast is a very good way right now. We are just a little bit short of the 1,000 subscriber threshold, which does get us the ability to monetize that channel. So it's kind of like a free way to help monetize, if that makes sense. That'd be a really nice thing. Again, huge thank you to the supporters on Patreon. It is what helps us do this. We, you know, have to purchase these books. We have commissioned the art, you know, all of that stuff. But thank you to everybody who has helped keep it going. Word of mouth, another great thing. If you, you know, listen to some of the seasons, just share one with some people that you think, oh, this is a relevant season for, you know, my friend group or something like that. Share it around. Mm-hmm. That kind of thing helps a whole lot.
Whole bunch of different genres in the previous catalog.
Whole heap and helping. And honestly, they're all bangers. So like you can't go wrong. They're all bangers. Just, you know, got somebody who's a little bit into Twilight Zone. Send them some Twist-a-Plot. Obviously, there's the Goosebumps. That's got a whole bunch of them. Some more fantasy, meaty, like actual RPG rolling kind of things. Of course, we got ourselves the Grail Quest.
Puzzle solving in Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah, or if they just like Sherlock Holmes. Like that was a really, I don't know. All those seasons are special wee babes. I enjoyed everything so far. And it is neat how different every season has been. I've really appreciated that.
Mm-hmm.
But alas, that's that. That's going to do it here for this week. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And we will see you next time, if you can fathom it.